We continue this week to follow the set readings from the lectionary, which is a three-year Bible, a set of Bible readings that with set readings for each Sunday. So for example, this morning the readings we're going to be choosing from are the same readings that people all over the world might be choosing from if they're following the lectionary. I was listening to the service on Radio 4 before it came out. Same readings. I thought, oh, I better change my sermon. When you look at lectionary readings, it's good to ask the question, what's the thread that's tying them all together? Because sometimes it's fairly straightforward, sometimes it's quite, well, you've got to look for it. So here's the challenge for you all today. See if you can spot the thread. It might be a different thread to the one that I've found, but just look out, see what you can spot in terms of what we're going to read. The first reading is a very famous psalm, and you might want to look it up. It's page number 628 in the Pew Bibles, because I'll be referring to it a lot during what I have to say. It'll be the sort of anchor, the platform that everything else is built on. But we're going to begin by just reading it through together. So you can do that from the Pew Bibles, or you can do that from the screens. We've got the words on the screen. And what I will do is we'll read it in canon. So I'll read the first verse, and then you read the second verse back to me. So I'm white and you're green, okay? And there are 24 verses, so I'll be reading 12 of them, you'll be reading 12 of them, and not necessarily all at the same time, if you follow me. We'll do it turnabout, and we'll see how we get on. But as we read, just remember that question that I put to you. What's this psalm saying? And then when we get to the next reading, you'll be asking, now, what's the common thread here? So here we go. From the director of music of David, a psalm. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, if I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. If only you, God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord? And abhor those who are in rebellion against you. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me, and know my anxious thoughts. Amen. Now, as I said, keep that passage open before you. I don't want you to look up this next reading. I'm just going to read it for you. It's the well-known story of God calling the boy Samuel in the temple. But as you listen to these words, just think about that question. What do these words have in common? What's the common thread here with the psalm that we've just read? This is 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and he said, "Here I am, you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." So he went and lay down. Again the Lord called, "Samuel." And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel a third time. Samuel got up and went to Eli. "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down, and if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling, as at the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." So what do these passages have in common? Well, these are my thoughts. To me, both passages seem to be about how much God knows about us. And that's sort of rolled out through three characters that are involved in the passages. The first character is David, David who wrote the psalm. We're looking at David's life in our Sunday evening series at the moment. And we've been learning that his life was never easy. There were times when it was really good, and those were the times usually when he made the biggest mistakes. There are times when it was really tough, when he had no friends or anything. He was forgotten to start with. His father forgot all about him when Samuel turned up at his village to anoint him. and that's the sort of story of his life. It's full of ups and downs. It's full of successes and failures. And there are times in his life when I'm sure he feels he's been forgotten. Forgotten by his friends, surrounded by his enemies. And I think he wrote this psalm at one of those times. So it's a time when he feels all alone. A time when he thinks, "My life's come to nothing. I'm going nowhere. Everything's gone wrong. I've got no future. Even my life is at danger. Nobody loves me." You know, one of those times. And outpours this psalm. And yet, the psalm is a psalm full of hope, absolutely full of hope. Because whether he can help it or not, in the words of the psalm, David is writing about the God in whom he trusts, the God who knows all about what's going on, the God who's been with him throughout his life, and the God who will never forsake him. Some of the saddest funerals I've had to take in my years here as a minister, I haven't had to take too many of them. I can count them on the fingers of one hand, actually. But they're funerals when you get a phone call from a funeral director and he says, "Could I take the funeral of someone perhaps who's passed away in a nursing home where they've been severely ill for a number of years?" And I ask for the contact person and they give me the name of a solicitor. And the reason they give me the name of a solicitor is because there is no one else. Any family they had long forgotten, any friends that they had long forgotten. And on those occasions, it's very difficult to find out anything that you can say about that person. Because if they've been very ill when they were taken into the nursing home, even the nursing staff don't know much about them. And on those occasions, I always begin by reading out the words of this psalm. Because it doesn't matter how abandoned they are or how few friends they've got left, God still knows them. It doesn't matter that we don't know anything about them. God knows everything about them. And he's been with them every day of their lives. Oh Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you already know it completely. And of course, it's the same for every single one of us here today. It doesn't matter how lonely we feel, how fed up we feel, how abandoned we feel, how forgotten we feel. This psalm tells us a deep, deep truth. God still knows us. He knows all about us. God who made us in his own image. God who gave us life. God has not forgotten us. He thinks of us as his very own children. He loves us with an everlasting love. But today's passage is not just about the fact that God knows us. In fact, all the passages put together are not just about the fact that God knows us. They're also about how well we know God. Take the example of the wee boy, Samuel. We're told in chapter 3, verse 7, that Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. Of course, the story of Samuel in the temple is really well known. We probably heard it if we ever went to Sunday school. We probably read it in a children's Bible if we had something like that. Samuel was the much longed for and hoped for first son of his mother, Hannah. She conceived after many years of marriage, so she really longed for this son, but she also saw him as God's gift to her. And so, as an act of gratitude, she promised that he would serve God in his temple. And sure enough, off he went, and he was raised in the temple, not straight away, and his mum visited him regularly, but he was there in the temple as her way of saying, thank you, God, for this young life. And then one night as he's lying asleep in the sanctuary, he hears a voice calling his name. And it's the voice of God, but he doesn't understand. It's never happened to him before. He's got no structure to place it in. He just hears a voice. So three times God calls him, and three times he thinks it's Eli. Eli is the old priest, the high priest, who's been raising him in the temple. And here's the thought. I don't know if it occurred to you, but it certainly occurred to me. Why doesn't God speak to Eli? I mean, Eli's the high priest. He's raised and he's trained in the ways of the Lord. Eli understands. Eli's been, the whole of his life has been devoted to God. If there's anyone in the whole land most likely to hear and understand God's voice, it's Eli the priest. So why does God choose Samuel, who's not likely to understand? What's going on? And I think that sort of takes us back to the words of Psalm 139 again. Because I sometimes, when I'm reading this psalm, feel that there's a sort of tension in the psalm. There's sort of two sort of opposite directions there in the psalm. It can almost be read in two ways, depending on the mood you're in. Sometimes it's as if the writer is trying to get away from God. Look at what he says. Verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me and your right hand will hold me fast. If I think the darkness is going to hide me, no, because darkness is not dark to you. It's as if the writer's trying to get away, but he can't. And I wonder if Eli the priest felt a bit like that sometimes. We're told in 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1, that in those days the word of the Lord was rare in the land. There were not many visions, In other words, the people had wandered away from their God. They'd lost touch with him. And I think it's highly significant that there at the very beginning, there's this phrase that the lamp at the temple had not yet gone out. Because it sort of sums up where the nation was at the time. You know, that flame of God's presence was flickering, hadn't quite gone out yet, but it's certainly going to go out soon. The word of God was rare in the land. There weren't many visions. And I think Eli himself is a really good illustration of this. In fact, I often wonder if this passage is as much about Eli the priest as it is about Samuel. Because yes, he's the high priest. Yes, he runs the temple. And he's been doing it for years. But for him, you get the feeling he's just going through the motions now. Because if you read the previous chapter, chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, you'll see that he's got two grown sons who help him run the temple. It's a complicated affair running a temple. There's lots to be organized, all these sacrifices. So his two sons are helping him. But his two sons are greedy and they're corrupt. And they're siphoning off a larger and larger portion of what's being offered in sacrifice for themselves. And you get the feeling this has been going on for years and years, and it's been getting worse and worse and worse, and Eli has done nothing about it. He knows about it, the people know about it, but he's still done nothing about it. It's as if his love of his boys has got between him and his love of God. It's as if, you know, when something gets between you and God, you start to drift apart and you start to lose touch. And it's like Eli has lost touch. And as a result, he doesn't hear God's voice very clearly anymore. Maybe he used to, but he doesn't now. Maybe he doesn't hear it at all anymore. And this is where the word of the Lord becomes really strong and powerful for me, because I sometimes meet people like that. People whose lives God had once been very, very real, and they'd been full of his joy. The joy of knowing how much he loves him. The joy of knowing that they can help him and serve him and make a difference in people's lives. You know, full of that joy. But something has happened in their life. And their faith has sort of gone out, like, you know, coals losing their glow in a fire. It's like they've lost their first love. It's got a bit tarnished, and they're either just going through the motions or they've just lost touch with God altogether. And maybe you know someone like that. Or maybe there are times when you feel like that yourselves. One of the reasons I love the story of Samuel and Eli is because it demonstrates how, with God, it doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. There's always hope. He's always trying to get back in touch. As I said earlier, it's as if there's this sort of struggle going on in Psalm 139. It can be read in two ways. One way is as if the writer is trying to get away from God. The other way is the opposite. It's as if he's changed direction. It's as if he's beginning to realize what he's been missing. Listen to these words from verse 13. I don't know whose phone that is, but it's a great ringtone. Listen again. God, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, you saw my unformed body. And all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. When I read these words, the image that comes to my mind, and I think it's deliberate, is the image of a mother's love for her child, which starts at the point of that child's conception. I've never been a mother, but listening to people who have been mothers, you know, something happens, and there's a real bond, and that bond carries on from conception right through that child's life, that the mother's love never stops. And that's what's being caught up in this image. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. There's no time when God ever stops thinking about us. It never happens. And it's the same for the child Eli as it is for the child Samuel. At no time in Eli's life has God ever stopped thinking about him. At no time in Samuel's life has God ever stopped thinking about him. Samuel hears this voice. It's calling out his name. He doesn't understand. To him, it's just a voice. The one who eventually does the explaining, the one who opens the door of revelation for Samuel, who opens this channel of communication between Samuel and God, is old Eli, the old priest, the one who thought he was past it, the one who thought God had abandoned him. He's the one God uses. Eli realizes what's going on. He realizes that it must be God speaking. He doesn't at first, but he does in the end. And so, through the events, Eli is drawn back into communication with God. And the fans of Eli, the flames of Eli's faith are fanned into flame again. And in the years that come, it's Eli who raises Samuel in the ways of the Lord. And Samuel is the one who eventually anoints David to be king of Israel. And David, as king, is the one who brings the people back in touch with God again. The whole nation back in touch with God again. But it all starts not with Samuel, but with Eli. Because if he hadn't said anything, if he hadn't explained, if he hadn't made it clear to Samuel what's going on, Samuel would have just gone back to sleep again. Oh, it was just a bad dream. Sometimes when I read through Psalm 139, I'm reminded of a story Jesus once told. A really, really famous story. Maybe you're reminded of it as well. It's a story we call the story of the prodigal son. It's a story of a younger son who, thinking only of himself, tries to get away from his family. And so he cuts himself off, and he loses touch with them all. And particularly loses touch with his father, whose wealth he is squandering. And inevitably, his life gets worse and worse. That's what happens. All the things the younger son puts his faith in let him down. His money runs out, his friends abandon him, and he ends up sad and miserable and alone. And then he remembers the comforts of home life. And he realizes what he's missing. And he realizes what a stupid idiot he has been. And he realizes that the best thing to do, hard though it is for him to go back. And so off he goes, and he arrives back, and by now he's destitute, and he is miserable, and he's apologetic, and he's expecting nothing more than rebuke and criticism. You can tell that from the words that he's prepared, that he's going to say when he gets there. It's a great story. It's in Luke chapter 15. Well worth looking up. And to his surprise, when his father sees him, he drops everything and he runs and he wraps him in his arms. You see, the younger son, he knows how well his father knows him. But he's forgotten how much his father loves him. And I know so many people who are like that when it comes to God. They know that God knows all about them, all the good things they've done, all the bad things they've done, all their faults and failings and the things that they're ashamed to even think about that make them feel bad when they remember them. They know God knows all of that. But they've forgotten how much God loves them. So here's some questions to think about. There may be someone here today who's like David, writing the words of that psalm. Maybe you're having a bad day, or a bad week, or a bad month, or a bad year. You know that feeling when it's like the light seems to have gone out of your life, and you just can't find the light switch. You don't know how to make it better again. You're feeling stuck, and you're feeling alone, and you're feeling forgotten. And if that's you, then Psalm 139 is yours. You can take it home with you. It's there to remind you that God will never forget you. He knows everything you're going through, and his love for you will never change. There may be someone here today who's finding all this a wee bit strange. You know, someone who's a bit like that wee boy Samuel. You know, something's going on. You can't quite puzzle out what it is. You've got the feeling God's involved somewhere, but you're not quite sure how to make sense of it all. If that's you, then what you need to do is find someone who'll explain, just like Samuel did. Someone to bring it all into focus. At the end of each service here, some volunteers come out during the final hymn, and they sort of sit in chairs over there in the corners. And that's just in case anybody wants to go and sit and share something that God's been doing in their lives. It could be something in the service, or it could be something in the past week, or whatever. And if you want them to pray with you, they'll pray with you. If you just want them to listen, they'll listen. And so if there's anyone here today who's got that Samuel feeling, like, what's going on? I need to talk to them. Then please don't go back to sleep again. Okay? I mean spiritually, I don't mean... Well, maybe you are asleep. Maybe you're not hearing my words. But, you know, we are here. There are plenty of people here who will listen and help you puzzle it all out. And then finally, there may be someone here today who's a bit like Eli, who's feeling that their faith is a bit old and jaded. Who knows there's something's happened in their life or someone's come into their life and it's become a barrier it's got between them and the faith, you know, that first love that they had for God and they've drifted away a bit and it's made you a bit disillusioned with everything, particularly yourself. And if that's you, then these words are for you as well. In fact, they're for all of us, because what happens to Eli can so easily happen to each and every one of us here today. Let's have those words up, Maggie. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. And see if there is any offensive way in me. And then lead me in the way everlasting. Let's just take a few moments in silence now. A time to think through what we've been reading and hearing and feeling just in these last few minutes. And a time to ask ourselves, what is God saying? What does he want me to do about it?